For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's December the 4th, and in Derech Hashem, we are in Chelek Beis, and we're up to Perek Gimel. And this is the one that's going to really get into the nitty-gritty of Hashgacha, to understand a person's place in this world. Now, the Ramchal is going to present a lot of possibilities for why things happen to people. And we're going to see, in fact, that there are at least 7 different forces at work that can determine why things happen to people. We, of course, never know which of the 7 is at work and what combination of the 7 are at work. But these are 7 things that could be happening within a person's hashgacha to decide what is going to be happening to a person at every moment of their lives. We could present it both in the positive and the negative, meaning we could present it as that these things affect a positive thing. A person has a big bracha, and it's based on these 7 things. It's easier to present it in the negative. It's easier to use these things to answer Tzadik V'Ralo than to use it. We could use it to answer Rasha V'Tovlo. But we'll focus on the Tzadik V'Ralo, just because, as you'll see, some of them are particular to bad things. So we'll do that. But you'll see how it'll apply across the board. So the simplistic thing is, when a bad thing happens, so we know that it's possible a person is being punished. That's possible. We don't like to think that way, first of all, because we don't like to judge people, and second of all, we don't like to think about punishment. So it's not something we like to do. It always brings up in one's mind, well, you know, if that person can get punished, so then am I any better? Well, we don't want to go down that road. It's a very, very uncomfortable place to be. But we are aware there's such a thing as schar v'onesh. A person can be punished. But when we don't want to go down that road, we often throw up our hands and just say, well, we don't understand. Now, with our discussion a couple of weeks ago about what happened in Har Nof, we offered another angle, which actually he'll discuss here as well. But there's many more angles that could also be looked at. We talked about several weeks ago when we did Prakim Aleph and Beis in Chelek Beis that Tzadik V'Ralo can also be in order to ensure the Tzadik's place in Olam Haba, so that he will be miskaper in this world, so that Olam Haba is a better Olam Haba, that his Olam Haba is greater, more profound, closer to Hashem, which is true. The thing is that really fits into Einish. Now, that's just a form of punishment. It's punishing him here so that he doesn't get punished there, or gets rid of his averus. Getting rid of averus is essentially punishment, kapara. So that's not a defining difference between punishment and that. It's just another way of saying punishment, or a positive way of looking at punishment. Good to get punished, because that way the Avera is erased, or wiped away, so that way Olam Haba is what it should be. But it's still punishment. We're going to have many other ways of understanding Tzadik V'Ralo over here. So, as I said, there are at least 7. So, first of all, says Ramchal, that we know that Hashem created this world as a place where there are nisyonos. And those nisyonos are different for each person depending on what their internal strengths and weaknesses are and the circumstances they find themselves in. So if the Hashem created different midos, there's compassion and there's cruelty and there's chesed and there's apathy and there's being generous and there's stinginess and there's anger and is being calm, But you have all kinds of different midos that there are, and generally one side is considered to be better than the other, although of course we know that if you go to either extreme it's a problem. But generally we want to have chesed, generally we want to have rachmanos, generally we want to be calm, generally speaking. And we are constantly being tested, or we're constantly trying to strive to do things correctly. So the circumstances of Olam Hazeh have to lend themselves to create that struggle. As he says, if Hashem wants a person to be to be tested about whether or not he'll give tzedakah, then there have to be two things. There has to be a poor person that he has access to, and he has to have money. Right? If any of those factors are not there, if he doesn't have money, if there isn't a poor person, or if there is a poor person but he has no access to the poor person, then you're not testing him. So there has to be a poor person who he has access to and he has money to give. Otherwise, where's the Nisayon? Where's the, right? So Olam Hazeh is set up in a way that creates all of these struggles. There is food which one can eat. If there weren't food that one could eat, then there would never be a struggle about whether or not I should eat the food. So there's got to be food, and I have to have access to it in order for me to struggle with whether or not to eat the food. In order to struggle with whether or not to eat kosher food, with whether or not to eat the food with a bracha, whether to say a bracha achrona, how much I'm going to eat, how refined am I going to be when I eat it, when am I going to eat the food, how am I going to eat it. All these things can only happen if there is food and I have access to it. And I'm hungry. If I wasn't hungry, or if I didn't care about the food, as the food that tastes the way I like it, otherwise, what's the test? So all circumstances have to be there in order to create the struggle. And Olam Hazeh is set up, and we know how much we struggle, so we know that Olam Hazeh is profoundly set up in a way to create struggle. The struggle is different for each person. So why is it different for each person? So on a very simple but true level, every person has something else that Hashem wants them to contribute. We know that there's a bigger picture about the entire world reaching Shlemus. We know that each one of us has a role to play in reaching Shlemus, in the world reaching Shlemus. We personally have to reach Shlemus, and the entire universe has to reach Shlemus. That happens through our individual struggles. And as a result, the circumstances that you find yourself in has to be, by definition, has to be different than the circumstances I find myself in, which in turn have to both be different than the circumstances you find yourself in. It has to be that way because each one of us has something else different to contribute. None of us has the same thing to contribute to the greater good, the greater whole. So by definition, our struggles must be different. The struggles can only be different if we bring different things to the table and each one of our tables is set differently. So each one of us brings to the table different appetites, different interests, different strengths, different weaknesses, and everybody's table is set differently. Everybody's table has different things available and different things unavailable to them. And this changes every moment of our lives. So every moment, every one of the billions of people in the world is bringing to their own table their own netios, their own interests, and their own struggles, and the table itself is different for each person. And your table today is not the same table as it is tomorrow. It keeps changing. So that is one factor that could be a reason why we could see a tzaddik and we could think it's Ralo. Why does the tzaddik struggle? Why is he poor? Isn't he a great tzaddik? Maybe his role in life that he's supposed to be contributing requires poverty. Maybe the emunah that he is supposed to demonstrate would require that he's lacking things. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to demonstrate that emunah. If he's such a tzaddik, how come he can't walk? It could be that not being able to walk is necessary for that tzaddik's contribution to the greater whole, to the greater good. So it's not a punishment. It's not It's not somehow something that wasn't supposed to happen. It was supposed to be there. He was supposed to have those negative circumstances because that's necessary for his particular contribution. Well, why did he deserve to have that particular contribution? Why couldn't he deserve to have the contribution in which you have to be rich in order to make that contribution? Or in order you have to be able to walk in order to make that contribution? That's a question we can't answer. Why did Hashem give you your particular task? And you, your particular, and you, yours, and mine? That's a question we can't answer. That is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his cheshbon about which person is given which task in the overall picture. But that since the task is different, the tools therefore must be different, therefore the struggles must be different. And he gives the famous mashal of a king who has many different servants who are all running the country, but each one has to be given a different, each one has a different task, and therefore each one has to be given different tools. So the one who's in charge of the royal garden has to be given gloves for the garden. And while the one who's in charge of the treasury is given a pen. Everybody has to be given a different tool to use in order to be able to complete their task. So that's one major factor. So that's already very complex. Because think about it, we're interacting with each other all the time, and since my task is different than your task, and as I am doing my task, it necessarily is going to, I don't want to use the word interfere, but it's going to affect your circumstances, and yet your circumstances have to be perfectly calibrated for you to complete your task. So Hashem is constantly moving things around, arranging things, so that everybody, each and every individual, has the tools necessary, the circumstances necessary, to contribute their job. That's already extremely complex. That's number one. Number two, add to that, as we've already discussed, that the situations that we find ourselves in are always affected by our choices. That's in a world where you take Bechira out of the picture. Just Hashem gives us our circumstances and He goes, okay, go. That's great, but that's not the way it works. It's not like Hashem sets it all up like a chess game and then goes, go. That's not what happens. There's this constant movement of everybody's making decisions and you're making decisions and sometimes we choose correctly. Unfortunately, sometimes we choose incorrectly. And those choices are constantly affecting our circumstances. So if a person makes a bad choice, and because of that bad choice, they deserve a bad thing, well, that needs to be incorporated into where they already were. And as the Ramchal writes, sometimes they work against each other. They probably frequently work against each other. It could be this person, in order to complete their task, needs to be wealthy. But it could be he did something for which he needs to be punished and needs to become poor. Well then, how does it work? How could they both be true? So that's where you have to believe in Hashem. Hashem has to figure out how at the same time to make him poor and wealthy. So that he's being punished with poverty, but he still has the wealth in order to complete his task. How do you do that? Well, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's problem, and he figures it out. A person can have both things happening simultaneously. Or there's the correct mix, the correct amount of each thing, which allows for both things to happen. When you factor in that each one of our choices affects each other, so then it really gets complicated. Because where each of us individually, Hashem has to weigh our choices versus our ultimate job, what I mean to say is the consequences of our choices versus our ultimate job, and then how that interacts with each other, so the complexity is just beyond human comprehension.
Can you give an example?
Sorry. So let's say that, let's say that in order for me, I want to take something that isn't so terrible, right? Let's say that in order for me to be able to complete whatever my task is today, today, this date in my life, I need to be challenged with whether I will give a $5 bill to a Mashiach.
Okay.
So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to bring a Mashiach in, and he has to make sure I have $5 on me, and then I'll run into the Mashiach at a time when I'm able to decide whether or not to give him the money.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So all that is great. What if simultaneously I do something for which I'm supposed to lose $5, but I only have $5 on me? Now what? So do I keep the $5 so that I'll be able to complete my task of giving the money to the poor person, or do I lose the $5 because I deserve to lose the $5 because of something I did?
Oh.
Right?
Lose the $5, you mean like what? Like,
drop it, it's a hole in my pocket. Lose the $5.
Okay.
Right? At the same time, what if the Mashiach did something for which he deserves not to get $5?
Uh-huh.
But he was the Mashiach that I was supposed to give the $5 to. But now he doesn't deserve to get it.
Uh-huh.
Right? So how does that... So does he have to bring another Mashiach? Hashem has to fly him in? You know, get him here? Teleport him over here as quickly as...
They have like four that come in at the time.
Okay, so... what do you have to run?
They have one... Right.
So, but that's not so far from the truth, and that's their own decision making. But
right.
Hashem has many different ways of making things happen,
right.
And if I make the wrong choice or perhaps the right choice, then things can be happen in a different manner to create the same challenge, but in a different manner.
But Hashem knows what's going to happen. So is it true that Hashem could technically like say, okay, well, I know that let's say you're going to need to give that, I know that let's say that Mashiach is not going to deserve to get the $5. So therefore, at the same time that this Mashiach is coming in, I'm going to make it that a different Mashiach, I'm going to put in his mind that a different Mashiach should also travel to this place.
Yeah, it's true he knows it's going to happen. But you have to bear in mind that when Hashem created the world, he set it up in a way that there are literally billions upon billions upon billions of possibilities of how things will work. So you're right, he does know what's going to happen, but he set it up in a way that it really is flexible. The system is flexible based on a person's choice. He does give free will even though he knows what's going to happen, which is a conundrum in and of itself. The Rambam handles that, but he does give us free will.
Mm-hmm. Meaning, really technically, it can all work out no matter what we choose, even though he knows what we're going to choose and has it working out that
right,
way.
Right. Which is again, now we've added a complexity upon complexity, which is beyond human comprehension. But that's only two factors. We have five more to go. Okay. So that's two. Three is that it's also based on my choices, but it might not be punishment. See, until now we've set it up as punishment or kapara for what I did. I deserve to lose the $5. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives something bad to somebody, not to punish them for what they did before, or to give them kapara for what they did before, but instead, because they did averos, to prevent them from doing another avera. L'mashal, let's say a person misuses the internet. So they did an avera. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want the person to misuse the internet again. So maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have them lose their access to the internet, which we call, right, the system is down. But maybe that's what happens. So that's not in order to punish the person. That's only to prevent further avera.
So isn't that like a schus that Hashem's gonna like?
That
Hashem would put a block in your way.
Yes, and he says whether a person has zechusim that Hashem would step in and do something like that. Everybody's different. There are different people have different amounts of zechusim from different angles. Our zechusim, our ancestors' zechusim. There's all kinds of zechusim. So one person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, might decide to step in and prevent further averus. The other one, he might not. And again, so that is also a result of choices, but a different type of result. So perhaps my tachlis requires that I have the struggle of whether to give $5 to the Mashiach. I made a decision which requires me to lose the $5, and at the same time, the Meshulach did something, he misused the last $5 he got, so Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to prevent that Meshulach from getting $5, because that way he won't do an Aver next time. So we have all these factors working against each other. So it requires, therefore, another method of getting everything to work. So it's another reason why you could have a Tzadik V'Ralo. So we've had three so far. That's required for his tachlis in life, Aleph. Beis, it's a punishment for something he did wrong. Gimel, it's to prevent him from doing further averus. Or maybe even to prevent him temporarily from doing further averus. So those are three separate, distinct reasons for things to be, for things to go wrong. But we have more to go. Next. I have to make sure I remember every single one. Hold on. Now, hold on. Oh yes. Okay. Number four. Things happen to people sometimes, which has nothing to do with them personally. Sometimes things happen to people because of
other people,
their parents, their children, or their, we'll call it their neighborhood, their environment. Which means like this. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs that a certain person be, let's use wealth, a certain person be wealthy. So it's for their needs, for that person's needs. The person's nisayon in life requires they be wealthy. And the person is therefore given wealth. They live their life with wealth because they need it for their nisayon. Then they die. What happens to their wealth? It goes to their children. The Ramchal writes, if the children don't do anything to be oiker, to uproot the wealth, they'll be wealthy also. Lav dafka because that was required for their particular nisayon. Lav dafka because they did anything to deserve it. It's just because they're the children of someone who needed to be wealthy. Now, obviously, if wealth will inhibit the child's ability to do their particular tachlis, Hashem will have to take away the wealth. Not as a punishment, but for the reason number one, in order to set the person up in a way that they can contribute their particular tachlis in life. But if the wealth doesn't hurt the person's tachlis in life, and the person doesn't do anything to deserve having it taken away, the person will be wealthy. Why? Not because of any of the reasons before, just because their father was wealthy. Or what if a person has a child who, because of their particular tachlis in life, needs to be brought up wealthy, needs to grow up in a home that's wealthy? It's necessary for their particular nisayon in life, their particular tachlis in life, that they grow up with wealth. So the parents might be given wealth, not because the parents deserve it, not because the parents need it, not because it's necessary for their particular nisayon, only because the child needs to grow up with wealth. Therefore, the parents are given wealth. That also can happen. Or, sometimes, the environment the person is in, the city the person lives in, the neighbor the person is in, it's necessary for that group, with their particular tachlis, that the group have wealth. Therefore, even if this particular individual happens to be in this group, really doesn't need wealth for his or her particular tachlis, nevertheless, the person is wealthy because it's necessary for the group to be a wealthy group. So this can also happen. So here you have a completely almost, it feels almost arbitrary, that just because you're in the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time, meaning because of your associations, this is really totally what we talked about before, about my decisions affecting you, your decisions affecting me, because we interact with each other. your circumstances, where you are in your family, where you are in your environment, in your community, all of that can also contribute to this whole thing. Just to give you a very simplistic example, the pasuk says, "V'ha'kohen ha'gadol me'echav." The Kohen Gadol, when he becomes Kohen Gadol, there's a chiyuv on everybody, all the other kohanim, to give him money to make him wealthy, because he has to be wealthy. Kohen Gadol has to be wealthy. So what is that about? Because the office of Kohen Gadol is one that needs to be a wealthy office. It's necessary that people see the Kohen Gadol as a wealthy person. Does that mean this particular person, this Kohen Gadol, needed wealth for his tachlis? Maybe, maybe not. But because he became Kohen Gadol, he has to be wealthy. That's required for the office of Kohen Gadol. Good question?
Yeah. So, first of all, doesn't Hashem specifically put you in a certain circumstance to make that happen? For example, let's say, like with the example with the kid who inherited all the wealth and he didn't do anything to make it, then Hashem should take it away, so he just gets the wealth. So didn't Hashem specifically make him be born to parents who were wealthy, who needed to be?
Yeah, but it could be that there were other reasons why he's with those parents. Could be that it has to do with other things that those parents are training the child with, or not training the child with, that are necessary for that child's being brought up in that circumstance. And the wealth is loymal of loymarid. It doesn't hurt and it doesn't help. So the person may end up with wealth because it doesn't affect profoundly where he is.
Okay, so my next question then is, is it true that, let's say, it's something, right, Hashem loves us and He wants to give us if it's not going to hurt us, right? So if, like, He's giving to us all day, right? So if it's not going to hurt, if let's say you have a regular person and it's not going to hurt him at all to give him wealth, then wouldn't Hashem just give him
wealth? Not necessarily. Uh-huh. Not necessarily. Hashem loves us, so He gives us what we need. If we don't need it, He's not necessarily going to give it to us.
Uh-huh. I hear. Unless, so you're saying this is a way that someone can get what they don't need.
Right. Uh-huh. No, that's what he's saying. He's saying this fourth reason could be what a person doesn't need. And it works both ways. It could be negative also.
Okay, so if a person doesn't need it, then why did Hashem put them in that circumstance? Hashem could have easily made parents that have that same chinuch things and the same everything except they don't have, they're not wealthy because of a small type change.
It could be that it wasn't necessary to change things. It was okay this way. In other words, the way that people's Bechira affected everything for thousands of years before this child was born, it wasn't necessary to move things around in that way. It all works out.
He didn't deserve not wealth either. So, I'm saying, mm-hmm. one or the other, it didn't make a difference.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Right. Yeah.
So there could be aspects of your life that really, it's not like a part of your particular insight.
Right.
It doesn't really matter. It's just because of everything else. So that's
right. That's what he's saying. Which, this is the hardest one for us to swallow because we're brought up that everything is perfectly Ashkacha and everything.
Right.
And this sounds like it's a little bit arbitrary. It's not that arbitrary because the point is like this. There's a difference between changing something and leaving something at status quo. That's the point that's being said over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will leave something at status quo if there's no need to change it. Even though the status quo wasn't necessary for this particular person, but it doesn't hurt, so he's not going to go and make dramatic changes. If the person needs the change in order to be able to fulfill their tachlis in the world, Hashem loves the person enough, Hashem will make all kinds of changes for that person. He'll bring a hurricane to change whatever it is. He'll do whatever is necessary to make the person's tachlis be achievable. But that's not the same thing as he's not going to change things if it's not necessary to change things. There's inertia. There's olam kinamin hago holech, that the world goes according to its natural way, natural order. And the natural order is, if parents are wealthy, the children are wealthy. If parents are poor, the children are poor. That's a natural order. That's the way things work.
It works the same, like I say, with, like, I'm saying, like, other factors, like intelligence or...
It could be with anything.
Beauty or all these things, like just genes, whatever, like, Baruch HaTavah, it doesn't really matter.
There is nature. We don't negate the fact that there's nature. Hashem did create a natural order. The natural order does have some sort of genealogy, although we can argue with the science whether it's really accurate or not, right? It's not conventional scientific gene wisdom does not like the whole idea of Yaakov Avinu being able to affect the sheep and make them different colors based on what he puts up in front of the parents, but we believe it, right? So I don't know that the science is accurate, but there is a natural order that is in place, and the natural order does follow, and Hashem has no reason to change the natural order provided that it doesn't need to be changed. Provided that the person is able to fulfill their task, that they haven't done anything to deserve it being changed. So, right? There is a natural order of things that is the default. You start there, and then Hashem makes changes when necessary.
I feel like it's almost like then it's not fair, because let's say you have, I almost feel like it's like not fair then, because you have, let's say, one kid who their parents needed to be wealthy, so therefore this kid ends up growing up very rich, and another person who their parents needed to be poor to fulfill their task, so they just end up becoming poor. But it's not like, I feel like that's just like not fair. Like, I feel like the hell if I was being told like everything is like perfectly fair because you need it for your tachlis and this and that.
It still is perfectly fair because if it doesn't affect their tachlis, then it's fine, it's good.
Okay, but so let's say both of these kids can either be wealthy or poor, it won't affect their tachlis. And now one's poor and one's rich. It's like
what you're saying is that what about all of the pleasure that the rich person ostensibly is going to have and all of the suffering that the poor person is going to have?
Yeah.
So you're right that there is a cheshbon for that too, meaning that it could be Hashem is going to have to even the scales in a different way, but it could be the scales are already even. Maybe the person who is wealthy has poor eyesight, and the person who is poor has perfect eyesight, which was necessary for their tachlis in the veld.
Uh-huh.
Right? So the pleasure versus pain cheshbin may anyway equal itself out. We may be jealous of the wealth, but there's a lot of other things besides wealth.
Uh-huh.
Right? There's all kinds of other things that are...
So basically what you're saying is that even though, let's say, the wealth versus poorness won't actually necessarily be on our terms considered fear, the bottom line is that the pleasure versus discomfort is going to end up being fear.
Yeah, for sure. It has to be. There has to be. That's what Talmud Pala, because Rachel is going to make it all work out in the end. But if there are, what I'm going to say is, if this person who was born into a wealthy family, if there are 1,000 different ways for that person to be set up in order to be able to do their tachlis, and one of them is to be wealthy, Hashem will leave it as wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number four. Number five is what we talked about 2 weeks ago with the Harnoch tragedy, which is that sometimes a person suffers not because they deserve it and not because they need it for their tachlis, and not because of the circumstances of their community, and not because Hashem is preventing them from doing anything wrong. The reason is as an oynish for other people, as a kapara for other people's averas. Either other people in their immediate circle, or other people in the entire generation, or for the really, really great tzaddikim, even for previous daros. And there can be suffering that is solely to be mechaper for previous averas. Averas that were done by other people, either in this generation or in previous generations. And that is, as the Ramchal writes, that is a huge schus for a person to suffer for that reason. And he writes, what's the pshat in that? So he says like this, Hashem wants as many people as possible to make it into Olam Haba. That's what he wants. That is what he would prefer, that everybody makes an Olam Haba if it were possible. Unfortunately, some people don't make it, but he wants everybody to make it. So the best way to make it is that you make it in on your own, which means you make the right choices, don't make the wrong choices, and you make it into Olam Haba. That's what would be preferred. But sometimes a person makes the wrong choices. But they don't make terrible choices, but they don't make it. But the choices they made are unfortunately preventing them from getting to Olam Haba. So we talked about how that could be rectified. They could suffer in this world. They could suffer in Gehenim. But another method Hashem uses is by passing that suffering on to a big tzaddik who is on the madrega of being willing to suffer for someone else's avera. Then that other person, the one who did the Avera, will get into Olam Haba on the coattails of the Big Tzaddik. By hanging on to the Big Tzaddik, they'll be dragged into Olam Haba. That's the analogy. Writes the Ramchal, if you're asking, is the Madrega of Olam Haba, of the Tzaddik who suffered, is it exponentially greater than the one who did the Avera and didn't get Kapar themselves? Of course. Of course, the Big Tzaddik who suffered for the other person, his chelik is exponentially greater. But it still gets the other person into Olam Haba. And that's better, even to get it on the lowest level of Olam Haba, it is much better than not making it at all. It's light and day. You can't compare the two. Getting in versus not getting in is already beyond comprehension, the difference. So sometimes that happens, and when a great tzaddik really suffers, especially when it's death, because death is hard to explain with the other ones, because the other ones are all circumstances in order to be able to fulfill a tachlis. Now sometimes death is fulfilling a tachlis. Sometimes that's the way it is. But when a really great tzaddik suffers, it's almost inevitable that this is playing a role. Maybe it's not the only thing playing a role, but it's hard to believe it's not playing a role. It's hard to believe, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, it's hard to believe with what happened in Har Nof that this was not playing a role. It's difficult to believe it. On the caliber of the people who suffered and who are suffering, the people left behind, the Almanos and the Yisavim, it's hard to believe that there isn't an element of being mechaper for the averos of other people, not just whatever other reasons are involved. But that is number 5, another aspect to Tzaddik Barava. Number six. I was trying to remember them before, and I forgot number 6 also. Number 6 is I remember number 7, but I don't remember number 6. Hold on. Oh, okay, right. Alright, the truth is, what I remembered is number 6. It's number 7 that I forgot. Okay, so number 6 is Gilgulim.
Okay.
Okay, so that's one which we're really not going to understand. Right? That not everybody agrees to the concept of Gilgulim, but many Mefarshim say it. The way Maharav Shiva of Weimar Zichron Lecha used to say it is that in recent years, in recent history, past number of 100 years, the concept of Gilgulim has become more accepted in the mainstream. It used to be that everybody, there was always a shita that held of Gilgulim, but it was always like not like the one that most of the Mefarshim held of. In more recent times, it has become something that more and more of the mainstream Gedolim and Talmidei Chachamim have held of. So, look, I'm certainly not going to argue the point. I don't know enough to argue the point. But the Ramchal certainly is holding the Gilgulim. And so he says, look, each one of us, this is not the first time we've been here. And therefore, over the times we've been here, the ultimate din at the end of time, that Yom HaGadol V'Anoro, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring everything by Mishpat, we're going to have to stand in judgment over all of our Gilgulim, because we really are a makeup of everything. So, especially in later Gilgulim, like now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu might be bringing Tsar in order to be Mechaper for what happened in previous Gilgulim, which we have no idea about. We have no way of knowing what happened in previous Gilgulim. We have no recollection and no way of knowing it. We have no Nevi'im to tell us. So that could also be going on. So that's another reason why something could happen to somebody, which has nothing to do with punishment, nor their circumstance, just because it really is punishment. Yeah. But not punishment for something that I can think back and say, what did I do to deserve this? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. You didn't do anything to deserve this. Not in this lifetime, anyway.
Which identity are you in?
Right. Because that's like the complex thing is, who are you married to? That's the complex thing. Don't worry about it. Kadosh Baruch Hu will figure it out. It'll all work out. All we have to worry about is this world. We don't have to worry about previous Google. We bury husband and wives next to each other. Right? That's number six. Number seven is that he writes that until now we've been talking about things which are asthmium. They happen for their own sake. The person needs for these things to happen. But then there are things that are ma'afshirim. They don't happen for their own sake. They happen because something else has to happen, and these need to trigger those things. So the classic case is you missed the plane and then it crashed. Right? So the missing the plane seems to be, you got a flat tire on the way to the airport, so it was a terrible thing. You missed the plane, but then, right, then that's a dramatic one. But that sort of thing can happen all the time in a much less dramatic way, where things happen that appear to be bad, but really they're just triggering something much better.
You may not know about it. I'm saying
you may not always know about
it. Like stuck in traffic, you didn't know that there was something else that was going to happen ahead.
You may not know.
You get caught at a red light. And,
No, you may not know. You may not always know.
Right.
But that also can be a reason, and we don't always see it. So at the end of all this, something happens to me. And I say, Hashem, why me? So you see that it's really a foolish question, meaning that I understand why people ask the question, because everybody feels like I don't want this circumstance. But you see how complex the answer to that question is. Why you? Well, maybe you need it to do your tachlis in life. Maybe you're being punished. Maybe you're being prevented from an avera. Maybe it has to do with the people around you. Maybe you're being mechaber for other people. Maybe you're being mechaber for a previous gilgul. And maybe this is in order to bring about a greater good. You have no idea. So we see so little of the bigger picture. See, by going through all this, you see that pashtus, we say that, why we can't figure things out? Because we don't have all the information. If we would have all the information, if we would know all the variables, we'd be able to figure a lot more out. But you see over here that even if you have all the information, every single piece of information, the billions upon billions upon billions of pieces of information you need to have in order to run the world, you still wouldn't be able to do it. Because it's such a complex formula. The algorithm to plug in all the various pieces, okay, based on all those things, and everybody else's all those things, right now, should I have the $5 or not? It seems almost trivial. But Hashem has to decide that every single moment of the day, for every single person. Should you have the cup of coffee that you want or not? It's such a trivial matter. But everything gets factored in. Everything gets factored in all the time. And the factoring is constantly recalibrated and recalibrated and recalibrated and recalibrated and recalibrated multiple times per second. And it's so mind-boggling just to get through. It's just so overwhelming to think through how all these things work. But these are the factors, as with everything in these sorts of matters. When a person says, we don't know the answer, why tzaddik v'ralo, it is true, we don't know the answer. Why is the tzaddik getting such a bad circumstance? Why? We don't know the answer to the question. But it's not because we don't have possibilities. It's just we don't know what's being applied when and where. That's what it is. We do know what the possibilities are. These seven are the possibilities. Which of the seven, or which combination of the seven, are being applied now, that's where it's beyond us. That's what we don't know the answer to. When you distill the conundrum of Tzaddik V'ralo to something like this, you see that it takes the philosophical stagnation out of the whole thing. A person who hasn't learned any of this, it says, doesn't make any sense. I don't understand. He's supposed to be a just God. He's supposed to be a loving God. Why is it happening? It can't be. So a person can throw away Yiddishkeit for that. And you see how foolish it is to throw away Yiddishkeit for that. Because it's really an arrogance. It's saying that I know everything and I can't understand it. It must be Yiddishkeit makes no sense. But you see how little we know and how many different factors can go into this decision by Kodesh Baruch Hu that this tzaddik should suffer in this way. Once you get it down to what we don't know is what is being applied, why, then already it's hard to believe someone would throw away Yiddishkeit for this. It's a question. Okay, we don't understand. We're not God. We don't understand what gets applied when. But at least we have tools. We understand what could be applied. Any other questions? We're over time. So any other? Okay.
Thank you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.